Now we come to external sources outside the organization. The first one is we go to professional bodies. What are professional bodies? These are the bodies, these are the types of outfits, the organizations which represent the particular profession. Like for example, we've got the Institute of Management, the Chartered Accountants, they've got their own institute at Cuff Parade in Bombay, for example. Company secretaries, and there are also, every industry has got its own body. NASSCOM for IT companies, you know, All India Tire Manufacturers Association, whatever. So each of them is having this own body. So through them also we get a database of people who could be looking for jobs. One source. Candidates can be sourced from there, and these bodies and trade associations have their journals where employers can put their requirement. They can advertise in the journals which are released by these bodies. The source is very useful to recruit highly educated and skilled employees. If I belong to an IT company, if I'm an IT company and I want an IT recruitment to be done, it's very simple. I just go to NASSCOM, I take their own magazine, internal magazine, whatever is going to the different members, and I simply advertise in that. So I'm attracting only the people whom I want, instead of putting it into a newspaper where the efficiency of recruitment will be very low. Okay? Advertisements, this is a common thing which people follow. Advertisements in business supplements and journals, business newspapers like Economic Times, Business Standard, etc. Job contents, locations, growth prospects need to be clearly defined to make the advertisements effective, and well laid out advertisements also work to build company brand image. Advertisements work pretty well. They have to attract first the person to read the advertisement. After reading it, he must feel into a wow. He must feel that yes, I must work for this company. And the facts given there should be authentic to what the company is actually having, not something which is being marketed without any substance. So all these are a part of the positioning of the ad in that particular source which is being read by the prospective readers. Employment exchanges. These are set under the Employment Exchange Vacancies, compulsory notification of vacancies Act 1959. Employment exchanges came into being in 1959. To give employment to people who are not getting employment, they have to just go and register, and these registered people, their list is available, and then when you go to the employment agency, employment exchange, they'll give you the people who can be hired for your requirement. So employment exchanges are ongoing processes of creating data banks of people who want jobs. Usually employment exchanges are at a very junior level, operation level. Employment exchanges increase the pool of possible applicants. This pool can be used for blue collar. Blue collar means the operation level and the production level. Technical and white collar. White collar also at a very junior level, not a senior level, not middle management. Then we come to campus recruitment, a B school typically, or an engineering college, or even a commerce college for the matter. Companies come there and they recruit people. Management and engineering institutes arrange placement for their students. There are placement committees, and this source is suitable for hire of freshly highly educated personnel. Okay, now we also talk about walk-ins. Today it's very common to reduce the time of hiring. What we do is we simply put in the magazines and the newspapers that you can read the advertisement, just phone up and just come into the office. So you don't have to wait till you receive some intimation from us. So that's a walk-in. Okay, next comes walk-ins are normally used for entry level and unskilled vacancies. For example, a fresh IT engineer, you know, he could be walking into a company to go for a developer's job. So that's a walk-in type of things. Walk-ins are usually at the entry level. They keep the prospective employer and the employee anonymous, and in some cases have internalized. Next we come to consultants. Okay, now who are consultants? Consultants are slightly, they carefully study the job profile. They also advise on changing the job profile so that it is properly marketed to the various audience, and they offer services more than just recruiting. They don't take the job spec sheet and they say, okay, you want so and so, we'll recruit you. They don't do only that. They advise. They also build up a certain type of a confidence so that the company can be bring in the right type of people. So consultants play a larger role, and these roles are usually played for middle and senior management positions. They are retained by organizations who recruit and select managerial and executive personnel. They keep the prospective employer and the employee anonymous. All of you will agree, when you are going for a middle or a senior management position, your company, you would like to keep them not informed. So this is done in utter confidentiality. especially when you're going to very senior positions, till the last day you'll never know which company the person is joining. It is kept that way because that is one of the decorum of recruiting and selecting people in the middle and the senior management level. Of course, by word of mouth, because of grapevine, news spreads, that is very informal, unconfirmed news, the person joins, that's a separate story altogether. Technically speaking, we are not supposed to reveal the identity of the employer as well as the employee openly. It's only when the final join takes place, the announcement come. If it's a very senior position, we see those announcements coming in business newspapers like Economic Times, Business Standard, etc. Right? Taking it further, contractors. Now this is a typical, when we outsourcing labor, outsourcing is a word which we use. So for example, in a BPO, we need about say X number of people, and it is to be required very fast at a very low operation level. And that is the time we got what are called as manpower contractors. They have number of people already with them and they put them into action. This all contracting thing has been happening in the building, in the construction industry for a long period of time. Right? And contractor people, normally they give people who are not permanent, they're temporary, normally. Acquisitions and mergers. When two companies are brought together, either company A takes over a company B or A and B come together, then it's coming under acquisitions or mergers. When this thing happens, it creates a large pool of employees. We have two of everybody, right? We have an HR manager from company A, HR manager from company B, two HR managers. Finance manager company A, finance manager company B, so two of them. So in every area, we'll have a large number of people coming in. Now, this pool of human resources is used to implement new organization strategy so that there is no necessity for resorting to standard recruitment methods. So we reorganize, we make a new organization chart altogether so that everybody is fitted in. Certain people who are not required are also asked to go, tragically, but that's how it is done. Competitors. Now this is again an area which is very trivial, very tricky, not trivial, tricky. Now there are, there's a term called poaching. Poaching means I steal a person from a competitor. Now there is, poaching is unethical. Suppose for example we have the three IT majors. So from one IT major to the other IT major, I can poach a person who is a specialist in one function there, whom I also require. That's poaching. Now taking from competitors is again a very tricky thing. There are organization bodies, there are industry bodies which says that poaching should not be done, and there's a type of an agreement that we will not poach from each other. But in spite of that, there are devious methods, indirect methods through which a person is taken from company A, competitor, he comes to company B, that is to your company, but he doesn't come directly, he comes through some other indirect route. So that technically that person doesn't become a poached person. Now these are all different ways of doing which people are resorting to, which is unethical. Once we decide that we will not poach people from each other's organization, we shouldn't be doing it. Next we talk about job portals. This is very common today. We know Naukri.com, Monster.com, there are a number of these portals wherein a lot of vacancies are advertised and people apply for it. Another recruitment source. Previous applicants. Applications which were given to us earlier, which did not click at that point of time, we may have them on hold. So we go through that all over again, and it's possible that some of them who were not eligible those days for that particular position are eligible today. So they may come in. Now we come to the selection process, the second process, the most crucial, important process which can make or break the organization efficiency. If I get the wrong person into the organization, then I've had it. And that too, the more the senior the person is, the more havoc he can create for the organization, the way he operates, because of the cultural dissonance which he can create, and so many other factors. So, what is selection? It is a process of choosing candidates with the necessary qualifications and competence out of the pool of the job applicants to fill jobs in an organization. The recruitment process is over, and we have got about say 100 applicants with us who fit the bill as far as our job spec sheet is concerned. Now these 100 people have to go through a selection process step by step. Depending upon what level the person is, depending upon how urgent it is, depending upon when we require and at what scale, at what location, the selection process can have different steps. It can be done in one single shot if it's a very junior position, urgent requirement, it can take two or three different steps if the need be. It can take three or four or five steps spread over a period of 3-4 months. If it's a senior position, it could take even 1 year if it is a very, very senior position. So there is no one single path. There is no one single process. There are steps based on the requirements of the organization and the urgency and the position. While recruitment is a process which positive approach to seek as many applicants as possible, selection has got a negative approach. I mean, they are using the word negative in the textbook. By negative, it means that it's more of a filtering process. Out of the 100 who are coming for the selection process, I may have to remove some of them, eliminate. And that is considered negative. So there are disappointments for people who are aspiring to join the organization because it starts eliminating them. Take the best and leave the rest. That's what happens in this. Okay. Now, this is the flowchart, friends, of the selection process. In your book, the flowchart is given in two different pages, under the recruitment page, and it's also given in the selection page. But I would prefer that you follow this. All these steps are comprising both recruitment as well as selection. Because recruitment is not all these things, recruitment comes before. That's why I've shown you the slide in this particular section, in the selection section, not in the recruitment section. So what happens in the selection? The preliminary interview takes place. A preliminary interview is about to know you better. Okay, your name, your background, etc. Just to get a feel about how the person is, whether he is what he's claiming himself to be in the application. And then we have a selection, number of tests could be there. There could be a written test. There could be a group discussion, GD. There could be a personal interview. There could be second level interview. There could be panel interviews. Different formats we can follow. Okay. Then we have the employment interview. The selection test here could mean aptitude tests or tests on personalities. So whether the person has got the aptitude, the type of a mental makeup, the skills with which he can work for the job which he claims he is capable of doing. Personality test to determine what sort of human qualities he have. Does he have the capacity to take stress? Does he have the capacity to get along with people? Is he a person who can quickly learn a new skill if need be? Now these are various things that may be required for the particular position. So we may put him onto a selection test. Then we have the employment interview, which is about the domain area where he is being taken for. If he's taken for a finance department, then he needs to be interviewed on the financial background of this person. The finance background in terms of what's the background does he have? How well he knows his accounts? Does he know to balance in accounts? Does he know the ledger entries? All those things we are supposed to know. If he's a production engineer, does he know the production shop floor pretty well? What are the skills he has gathered? What is the learning he has done for so many years while he was in production? So that's where the employment interview comes. Then we talk about reference and background check. Really speaking, if you ask me personally, reference and background check does not mean too much, because reference check and background check can always be, it always comes in a very goody-goody form. It is just an add-on. Two people are usually asked for reference. One is the person under whom you have worked, an employer who knows you, a supervisor or a boss who knows you in terms of your technical competence as well as your behavioral. And the third and the second person could be a person who knows you from younger days in terms of your character, in terms of your behavior, etc. How good a human being you are. These are the normal two references which people ask for. And this is the next step in this. Then we take the selection decision. Then we decide whether to take the person or not take the person. Once we decide, the person may go through a physical examination, which is all about the medical test he goes through. He may go through all those things like blood tests, you know, stress tests, etc., 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 just to see whether he's medically fit for the job which he's taken. And the job offer is made to him in the form of an offer letter. The offer letter is given to him. And then the employment contract he has to sign, which is basically a legal document. It is not given in many companies. Employment contract says it's a contractual obligation between the employer, you, and the employee, me. And it is saying the duties and obligations which I'm supposed to fulfill as much as the duties and obligations which you're going to be making me fulfill. Now, that's basically a legal document which is rarely available. It is rarely signed. And the last one is evaluation. Evaluation comes after we take the person and he starts working. On the job, we start evaluating him. And we try to see how well the person is fitting into the bill. The promise he has made and what he is doing right now, is there a disconnect? What's the gap? That's the evaluation. Okay. Now, I have already explained this to you, so I'm quickly running through this. This is a preliminary interview. What is done here is the task is carried usually by the HR staff, as I told you. It's the first interview which you have with the HR people. A word of caution, friends. Those of you who are into HR, particularly, if you come from a pure HR background, now this is an observation, not a comment against anybody. If you come from a pure HR background, you may see things which the domain people may not see. At the same time, you may not see things which the domain wants. There have been number of instances where the HR people are knowledgeable in terms of theory as to what a user department wants. There are times when the HR department is knowledgeable about the theoretical aspects about what their user department wants. But there are certain practical things which the operation people can see, the user department can see, which the HR may not see. As a consequence, the HR department, the HR recruiter, the person who is sitting in the selection board might by default reject a person who may otherwise be good. This is my observation, having sat in the panel in a few companies. So I caution the HR people that before you reject someone, have a word with the user department. It's possible that there may be an error in your selection understanding because you do not know the operations or the particular user department's requirement properly because you have not been in the user department before. In fact, I've seen that the HR people who are working in HR departments, if they come from any line background, they seem to be having a better understanding about the organization's working. And when they sit in the selection panel, I've noticed that those people are, their error of judgment is much, much low. Selection tests, I've already explained this to you. Employment interview, it's about the department where you're going to be joining. And this can be done one-to-one, sequential, one after the other, or a panel interview, all of them sitting together and firing questions at you. Reference background check, I've already explained to you. Next, we go to selection decision. The final decision is taken. Next comes a physical examination out here. This is something which you can go through, right? I've already explained to you. Then the job offer is made. The employment contract is signed on the day the candidate reports for work. Letter of appointment is offered. It includes all details related to the job, compensation, prerequisites, perquisites, working hours, leave and holidays, all those things which is eligible for. Again, in today's working, many organizations do not give all details. They don't reveal much, they conceal a lot. That's unethical. Many people come across and tell me, sir, this is the offer made to me and this is what I've got and I'm feeling disappointed. So what is verbally given is not enough. We have to put it down in writing. Employers and employees both have to make a note of this. Evaluation. The selection system is evaluated at fixed intervals. Feedback is collected from the line managers and used by the human resource managers to arrange improvements in the selection process. After the selection process is over, I placed you in the department and I have to take feedback from your departmental head. Is he okay? Is he in line with what we wanted? Does he require some skills? Have we missed out on some aspect of him while we were selecting? Has our efficiency been proper or not? This is a feedback I need to take from the user department for whom we have hired a person. That's evaluation. Okay. Parameters used for evaluation include the performance of the new employee, the employee turnover, attrition, separation, etc., etc., etc. Now we come across what is called as induction orientation. There are two terms. Induction means you're taken into the organization and for a few days you go through what is called as a socialization process. It's called as a socialization process. Imagine you're going to an organization, to somebody's house, your friend's house, your friend's friend's house. Okay, now the friend's friend's house is not known to you and he is asking you to come to his place and you go and sit there, nobody is there to attend to you. How would you feel? You'll feel a little odd. You may not want to talk, they may not talk to you, you may not feel so open to talk to them. So you'll feel a little odd. So will you be able to converse or communicate with people? No. So the same thing happens when you go to an organization, you're sitting, you're given a cabin or you're given a desk, everything is there but nobody talks to you. And you do not know what's going on. And there are companies which say that let him learn on the job. That's not correct. The moment I take you in an organization, I need to welcome you and make you go through the induction process, which is nothing but making you get familiar with every department and all the different people in the company. Thereby, you capture the culture of the company. You get some idea that this is what the organization stands for. The outside story in the world is different. The inside story will be different when you go through induction. This is true with most of the organizations. Okay? So, this induction is a few days of trip, I would call it, in different departments to get to familiar with the various people. Then comes orientation. Orientation means after the induction is over, you are made to sit at the place where you are taken, and then you learn the job, you learn the skills of the job on the job. That is orientation, where you are observed. Orientation is the time when your probation is going on, right? Induction conveys general information about work routine, working hours, timings, breaks, leave, holiday, transport facility, etc., etc., etc. All these things are covered in this. Information about the organization's policies, work rules, employee benefits, etc. Induction is conducted to remove anxiety from the mind of the new employee, as I told you, and also to create favorable impression about the organization and the work environment. Later, new employees are requested to complete a questionnaire on their induction, and this feedback is used for evaluation of the process. This is supposed to be done, it is not done in many companies. After your induction is over, you are supposed to fill up a induction completion sheet and give it to the HR people so that they get scope for improvement to make the induction much more acceptable, much more attractive for the new recruits. Now, just some related reading, something which is connected to the topic. In addition to rising rates of attrition, attrition is what basically people leaving en masse. This is very common in service sector. We have attritions in BPO, for example, alarming rate of 30%, 25%, 30%, which means for every 100% coming in, 100 people joining, 30 people are leaving. That too rapidly, en masse, together. Now, this is a very alarming thing that's happening in many industry. And there are reasons which I'm not discussing in this forum. In another forum, we'll talk about it. Right? In addition to rising rates of attrition, HR in India is plagued with incidence of no-shows. No-show is very common. What's a no-show? You come for an interview, you get selected. Very common. Many youngsters who are listening to me must have done this. You may be smiling when you're listening to me. Okay, what you do is you go to a company X and you get an appointment letter in your hand and you don't join them. You take that appointment letter and you go to another competitor and say you start bargaining for a higher package and a maybe a higher position. This becomes a no-show. No-show can be for various reasons, but one of the principal reasons for which a no-show happens is the person uses the letter for a bargaining, or he is not sure about joining for his own reasons. He suddenly gets an afterthought. This is how tricky human beings are. Hence, recruitment selection is a very tricky process. After completing the whole process of selection, HR manager is horrified. A very strong word we have used here. To observe that on the appointed date, new appointees fail to report for duty. You go and tell your boss, you go and tell your CEO, this person is going to be joining for sure on so-and-so date. And on that date, early morning, either he gives you a call or there is no call and he has not joined. And when you try to call him up, number of times his mobile is put off or he is not available and you wonder what went wrong. And what happened? All the efforts which you go through, all these months for recruitment and selection, everything goes for a toss. How frustrating it must be. This is what happens with human beings around. Now, how to make it happen is a very super type of a skill. It's not very easy. There's no one single method. What most companies do is they use coercive methods, forceful methods. If you don't join, penalty, or after joining some penalty, they try to force people to join. But if you tell people, force people to join, people will get forced only up to a point. Beyond that point, every human being wants a freedom of his own choice. So it's very subtle. How to maintain the freedom of the person, make him join at his own will is a big skill. And that is a very, very important form of communication which we need to do. During our communication, we sometimes inadvertently send wrong signals. And these signals are caught by very, very sharp people. So they take those signals and even before verifying, they take a decision, I will not join the company. This happens. So this is one of the things about no-show. This no-show act is unethical and can harm employees' career in the long run. Now, this is the employee's point of view. It's both ways. If a no-show is happening, after I sweat it out, I've done my recruitment selection process, a long process which has costed time and money of my executives. And if people don't show up, it's my problem. It's me who's at fault. I can't blame the employee alone. It's a two-way traffic. As far as the employee is concerned, it shows about his unethical behavior. As far as I'm concerned, it shows about the way my recruitment selection process has not been fine-tuned. It's very important. Smart hiring should be able to engage candidates during hiring process to avoid no-shows. That's what we call smart hiring. Okay, smart hiring is not about acting smart or something. It's about you should have the keenness to catch signals. When somebody is conversing with you, we must learn to catch signals. There are some trainings. Some trainings actually tell you how to catch signals from people, body language, eye accessing cues, different ways of catching it. Within about 10 minutes, excellent people, people who have got very good calibration skills, they can capture this thing pretty well. Right? Educational institutes are also assisting by not allowing employees to appear for more interviews once they accept a job. That's a coercive method. Give only one interview choice for a student. Fine, good enough, up to a point. Beyond a point, the freedom of choosing or not choosing is lost. Then he may land up being a wrong recruit in a wrong company. This can happen. Many a time, it is only a wrong selection that ends up in a no-show. As I already told you now, just a second back, a wrong selection appears in a no-show. Offering joining bonuses and buying off notice periods are some other mechanisms to ensure waiting time is reduced and chances of joining is increased. Companies adopt different methods to take people. They'll offer an additional bonus if you join on so-and-so date. Lots of things. But in spite of doing all these things, you can't guarantee that the person will definitely join. You have to keep your fingers crossed till the day he gets placed. Placement technically means the day I join today, I spend the full day, that is called as placement. So till it happens, I cannot say for sure that the person will join. For candidates, it is imperative that they understand the consequences of doing such a thing. Many candidates don't realize it. Actually, they are ruining their own career when they do this. Their reputation is maligned among the companies which fall under same sector or are interconnected. However, in India, it is not considered unethical to accept such an offer and then join the organization. We do it. There could be other reasons. The company itself has made some unethical demand on you, or you start perceiving the company differently, or the brand of the company is not positioned well in the marketplace, and some people, some well-wishers of yours have told you don't join the company, and the last minute this can happen. The typical Indian scenario is that when we go for interviews, we don't tell anybody. Especially if we are qualified, we don't do it. And the interview process is over, nobody knows. And on the final day before joining, you may go and tell somebody close to you. And that somebody will give you a shocking news, shocking inverted commas to you, which will actually start making you think, should I join the company? This can happen. This is a typical Indian scenario. And then you may refuse to join. Now, what you need to do, only you know. I am not recommending anything. The point is, at the end of the day, there are a number of reasons for which no-show takes place. No-show needs to be properly handled. That's what is a provocation we are giving you when we are asking you to go through the additional reading to be done. Summary. Now we come to the final few, one or two slides. There it is. Recruitment is a process of searching for and obtaining applications for jobs so that the right people can be selected from the pool of job seekers. The process of recruitment involves planning, strategizing, searching, screening, evaluation, control, and the sources of recruitment could be either internal or external. And the most popular methods of recruitment are advertisements in newspapers, consultants, walk-ins, campus recruitments, talk-ins. People call up also, you know, call-in interviews are also very common these days. While selection refers to the process of picking right candidates from the pool of applicants which we have already received, the final selection is generally done by HR departments in consultation with the line managers. The selection process consists of 8 steps, which we have already shown in the form of a flowchart. Starting from preliminary interview and ending with evaluation of the selection process, an induction is done to provide new employees with necessary information that they will need to function effectively in an organization. And with that, friends, I thank you very much for listening to me, and I am sure this has added a lot of value to you. Good luck.